You are tuned into the Woman's Magazine on KPFA. I'm Tara Darabji, and today I'm joined in studio by two amazing women writers, Elmaz Abaneder and Faith Adiele, who will both be performing at the Voices of Our Nation faculty reading this Thursday, 7 p.m. at Berkeley City College. Elmaz Abaneder is the program director for Voices of Our Nation. It's a week-long writing workshop for writers of color taking place this week at UC Berkeley. She's the author of Children of the Rujma, A Family's Journey Through Lebanon. She's authored numerous plays. She's the recipient of the Penn Award, been a Fulbright Scholar in Egypt, and teaches at Mills College and has led workshops in Palestine. We're also joined by Faith Adiele. She's an author, speaker, teacher. She wrote Meeting Faith, a travel memoir about becoming Thailand's first Black Buddhist nun. She is the co-editor of Coming of Age, Around the World, a Multicultural Anthology. Both of these wonderful women will be performing this Thursday at Berkeley City College, and both are teachers at Voices of Our Nation Writing Workshop at UC Berkeley. And I'm so happy to be joined by both of you in studio today to talk about your work in the literary arts as women of color creating social change.
And thank you for having us.
Thanks for having us.
And Elmaz Abaneder, let's start with you. You're a founder of Voices of Our Nation. This is one of the only writing workshop for people of color in our country. And as a woman of color, why was it important for you to start VONA?
One of the reasons I found it really important to start VONA is when writers of color sat in writing workshops, their color got in the way of their writing. In other words, the audience, the readers, even the teachers didn't know how to address the story beneath the symbols that they didn't recognize or the behaviors that they didn't recognize. We have in our various cultures different family codes and languages and combinations of cultural aspects that sometimes get in the way of being able to talk about the work. So writers of color are often stopped or paralyzed by this lack of understanding by the people in their community. So the VONA Writers Workshop lets us get to the writing and push back through those symbolic things that are so troublesome for the rest of the writing world.
And Faith Adiele, why do you write?
Why do I write? That's a good question. I think I'm in a generation, I'm first generation American, I'm also mixed race, and so I think writing is really the way I process the world and kind of the cultural complexities that I grew up seeing and also participating in. So it helps me work things out and then find more people like me. The more I tell my story, the more other people come out and I connect with them around that. And I see it almost as a kind of a political or spiritual mission that by telling my story, I'll create more space for people like me.
And where did you grow up and what's your cultural mix identity?
I grew up in rural Washington State in the Southeast. My father is Nigerian and was a graduate student just visiting America. And my mother is the daughter of Nordic immigrants, Finnish and Swedish immigrants.
And I'll start with Faith with you on this and then go ahead and chime in, Elmaz, but how have you found your work to be a tool for social change?
Well, originally I actually started, before I even wrote, I started in social justice work, and I found that a lot of the tools that I was using to train students to become activists are things that I then used in the classroom to help students find their voices. I found that personal narrative was really the first step to finding out who you are and then what sort of society you want to participate in. So a lot of the exercises and the skill building that we went through to work in multicultural social justice collectives, I end up bringing into the classroom and really teaching students to take charge of their education and figure out what they wanted to do with their writing and, to have a purpose behind your writing, not just because you like words, but you're really trying to communicate and get involved in a larger dialogue that will lead to kind of greater understanding, a greater cultural exchange. And so the more I write that way, it prepares me to teach that way. And the more I perform my work that way, then it all leads toward this larger dialogue that I want to be having globally.
Yeah, I find it really interesting how storytelling is such, it's like, it's just such a basic thing. We're all hardwired for it.
Yeah.
And even, you know, my daughters, like a lot of times when they're getting anxious, I'll just like tell them a story and it calms them down. But I think what's so unique about it is even though it's so basic to our nature, how many of us are afraid and unable to tap into our stories and even begin to open up? And I think you're really right in terms of creating larger social change. Mm-hmm. If our stories are bottled inside, if we don't know who we are, if we don't embrace our roots, if we're not, if we're still holding that back, mm-hmm. how can we begin to even start to change the world around us? And it's so revolutionary and yet so simple.
Right. It is revolutionary and yet simple. And so many, particularly people of color, have been told that our stories don't matter, or they haven't seen it in school, and so they have shut down. And so it is just revolutionary to say, hey, you can tell your own story, every aspect of it, completely own it, and that there's space for it. You can demand that in the national narrative.
And I think too, as women of color, then you have sort of a double oppression, because even if we're starting to break through on social movements and telling the story, a lot of the times I think women in communities feel like, okay, well, we're going to tell the man's story, or that's the story that comes forward, or the movement is so important that I'm going to keep my need, my oppression, or whatever bottled so that we can make this next step. And so I think it's really powerful to see successful women of color like yourself being able to start to redefine that paradigm. And Elmaz, I know that you've done some really amazing work in social change through your writing and work, and I just wanted to hear a little bit more about how you've really seen writing as a catalyst for social change in your life and for the many people that you work with as well.
It's interesting. I was listening to Faith Talk and I was thinking, did I think about those things when I was writing my story? Was I thinking about I'm opening a dialogue, I'm, you know, tilling the soil for other people to come along and plant? And really, I was telling stories in a way that my father and mother told stories to us when we were kids. Arabs are storytellers, and that's kind of the root of our, you know, our culture. We tell stories, we write poetry for every event. On the other hand, when I saw the power of the stories I was writing, it made me want to take the harder issues about being Arab and Arab American and create stories around that, because I could see how one story, say the story of my family, had such a good effect in making people familiar with Arab families just through my family. And then I can look at, say, the situation in Palestine and write a story about somebody there, and as a result, maybe change a mind or create a perspective around it. So while I didn't say, okay, my stories are going to be tools for social change, seeing that response to the storytelling aspect of my writing life made me want to do it more and to embrace the things I really care about politically in such a way that they become my story. And I have to also say, in response to what Faith was saying, creating that larger opportunity for others, I don't know if my books would have been written if Woman Warrior was never written. Because mm-hmm. Woman Warrior was my, like, permission slip to say women's stories are important. Women who live in patriarchal societies can own the stories, and they can deliver them to the world. And I really was guided a lot by that, the existence of that book on the planet.
I think it's really true because, you know, I mean, I've even seen it, like, this week I'm actually participating in Voices of Our Nation, which both of you are teaching at. And, you know, when you get a group of people together and they start sharing their stories in that way, I think that, you know, for me as a writer, it helps me push my edge. You know, if someone takes that risks of a part of themselves and is vulnerable and gets up in front of other people and goes there, in a way it gives me permission to reach inside and find that story that I'm not comfortable telling and start to tell it. And I find that a lot of times with art, it's the story that is the least comfortable, that is the one that most needs to be told. And so I guess that's one of my questions for you, Faith Adiele, is what's the story that you have told that was really hard to tell?
Oh, wow.
And now tell it on the radio, right? I'm like outing you.
Tell all program.
Actually, I mean, I think every story, the first time you tell it, seems incredibly hard. And then as soon as you start telling it and it's out there, I mean, I think initially just coming out as a mixed race person, that was really challenging because it was, you know, I like to say that I was Obama before he was. So it was like back in the day when if you were down with the black cause, you didn't talk about being mixed. And, mm-hmm. you know, that was kind of seen as divisive. And then I think when I wrote my book about being a Buddhist nun, also that seemed, I thought, oh, that's going to make me even seem like a stranger, less authentic black. So that was part of it. And now I'm telling things about the circumstances of my birth, the fact that I was born in a home for unwed mothers, and the fact that, you know, my father rejected me initially, and things that, I have shame around that, as well as I wasn't, you know, I'm always a little worried to show things, to show folks of color or Africans as kind of less heroic. So those weaknesses that are so authentic, I mean, so important to creating authentic, you know, fully fleshed human beings. But initially you feel guilty for being the first person saying these things, you know. And so it's like you have to be really clear on why you're doing it. And then you also know that people are going to know your business too. You know, when you go out in the world, people are going to know stuff about you and you don't know anything about them. So it's always a risk.
And your home group gets mad at you.
Yes.
They do. They get mad at you for being honest. And it's really a hard burden to carry.
Yeah.
And how do you handle that? I mean, I think that's one of my fears is when you're writing about your community and your family and you're putting it out there, binding it up, and it's going out by the thousands. How do you handle that truth? And the reactions that you get, have you had, has it led to more sort of honesty and connections within personal relationships in your family, or has there also been backlash? I'm talking more about like the family than the larger community.
Well, my family was interesting because I had to do a lot of interviewing because our family tree had only men in it. And the family letters.
What do you mean, only men?
Yeah, they only
like
had.
Their birthing? I mean, yeah, like, what is going on there?
It was really interesting. I'm like, and you got on this earth, how? Oh, so that was interesting. So
unbelievable.
And we had diaries and letters and things that were only written by the men.
Mm. Was that a literacy?
It was a literacy issue, pretty much in power, because part of what countries do that are invaded all the time is people keep personal history so that they know who owned this land and who was the judge here and who had the baby and who owned the money. So they had to keep their own personal histories. And Lebanon, as you know, was under the Ottoman Empire for centuries. So, you know, that was part of creating a library, was part of the culture. So people, I did a lot of interviews. The interviews conflicted. I chose the way to tell the story, sometimes showing the conflict, sometimes not. And when my family came back to me and said, that's not how it happened, my answer was always, write your own damn book. You know, the thing is, there can be
tell
five.
Your own story then.
Yeah, there could be five books about the same time. I don't care. You know, this is mine. Memoir is memory. It's not history. And that's one of the things I push over and over again.
I like that. Memoir is memory, not history. Can we hear a little bit of some of your work, Elmas?
Well, it's interesting that you should ask because my poem is about the secrets that people tell, and to hear what Faith is writing about right now hearkens to this poem. I have a friend whose mother just died, and as she was dying, unloaded a load of, like, hard information. Mm. And he's not going to be able to digest it for a long time, so I wrote this poem in response to that, and it's called The Last Lesson We Learn. I want the mothers to sign contracts that they will take their secrets with them. They won't unearth the relics of children gone or lose the imprint of their thumb on the knob of the stove in a house left long ago. I want them to hide inside the prayers that hum the house in darkness and hold the silence that makes singing a miracle. They should not lift a frail finger to point to the drawer where the embroidered pillowcases weigh with letters heavy that would have been written if they only had time. Mothers have no debt on this earth. Everything is paid off. Don't wax into the chime of old language, melody unstrung. Fall back onto their commandments that have ruled so long, we forgot that they had not written the holy book, fraying on the nightstand. I saw you take it when we were busy and stow it in your duffel. I know who I am without the dissembling of the DNA, the counting of the fibers and cells and comparisons of form and skin color. Don't use my eyes to reminisce. Don't forget where you are and talk to old friends who haven't been seen in 40 years. They are not here. I am. Mothers, you can go. Hard as it is to keep the trunk packed tight, load into infinity, carry it off to wherever is afterwards, or forget about it altogether. As much as we whisper to you, we really can't hold all that's in there. Don't remind us that the dying have no regrets. Nothing can be done. Sorrow can be felt only by the living.
Sorrow can be felt only by the living. The words and voice of Elmas Abinader. Thank you so much for sharing that with us. And you will be reading also this Thursday at Berkeley City College.
7 o'clock.
It's the hottest. I think it's the hottest reading of the year.
I think so.
Like, you got to like wring out your shirt midway through because it's just like it goes off. It's incredible. Yeah.
We definitely have 10 readers this year.
Oh my gosh. Wow. Break it down. Who's all going to be there?
Us. The most important.
Yeah, the hot woman in this room right here.
Tanana Reevdu, Evelina Galong, Matt Johnson, Willie Perdomo, Randall Keenan, Maza Menjiste, Mino Hajwarwata. I didn't miss anybody, did I?
That's nine.
If we did, we're sorry.
We're tired.
We don't have the fly.
Patricia Smith.
Patricia Smith. There it is. The great Patricia Smith.
Yes.
Not to be left out. Yes. It'll be amazing. And it's free.
And it's free.
Yeah.
I mean, that's...
But you want to get there early because the seats
it'll
are going to go.
It'll be packed.
Yep. Yeah. And Faith, you'll be reading too?
Yes.
But can we get a little sneak preview?
Sure. I'm trying to think, should I go with history and secrets or should I go more contemporary?
Let's go contemporary. Come on, mix it up for us.
Okay, okay. Okay, this is from my most recent publication, actually, which I started to use kind of bits of my story to then also kind of talk about, kind of turn them into articles for people to talk about things. So this is an article that came out for Oklahoma Humanities Review. They were doing something on reconciliation. So I tell a personal story and then kind of pull back to kind of comment on larger things. But it's just a little bit. My mother had been conducting serious social anthropology for my sake. She'd been watching black culture from afar, studying black bodies for clues. Each month, Ebony and Jet and later Essence made the long journey from New York City to Sunnyside, Washington. Each month, we tore off the brown paper wrappers and ran our fingers over the glossy covers as if blackness could be read like Braille. Diana Ross is Billie Holiday, black colleges and cheerleaders, most influential blacks. We weren't exactly sure what it all meant, but it was clear that there was another America strewn with black as beautiful banners somewhere over the hills. 9 years old, Mom decided, was old enough for me to apply for citizenship. One Sunday, she burst into my bedroom waving a photo spread of the Maude, brilliantly costumed, halo-haired Sly in the Family Stone. "How would you like an afro?" she trilled. "It's what they're wearing now in all the magazines." After some coaxing, I settled before the mirror and felt the plastic hairpick climb my scalp and draw out, stopping in midair. Little did we realize that this simple gesture was equivalent to drawing a line in the sand. It certainly didn't feel like a style, but by aligning myself with the Jackson 5 rather than David Cassidy, I had chosen black over white, which in Sunnyside would be taken as a betrayal, a declaration of war. The reaction began benignly with the collective intake of breath when I walked into my third grade classroom on Monday, escalated to notes passed to class, passed in class, "So did you stick your finger in a light socket?" and catcalls on the playground, but ended without grave mishap. By day's end, a few older kids approached and requested permission to touch the afro. This too seemed benign, the first 1, 2, 3, 5, 10 years I stood motionless, a stranger's hand in my hair. After the afro, however, now that I'd become officially black, there was no going back.
The voice of Faith Adiele, who will be reading this Thursday. And this is an incredible piece. I think that a lot of times, I think as mixed race identity, you can't win.
Right.
You know, it's like... People are either, you know, it's are you betraying your mom? Are you betraying your dad? Who are right. you putting down? People compliment you. Oh, you know, I don't see you as black. Right. You're white like me. It's like, which half of you do you box out?
Exactly.
And it's just an incredible piece. And thank you for sharing that with us. And we just have a couple minutes left. And I think, you know, what I really wonder, and we kind of got into it a little bit before, is the books and the writing that has influenced you. And I see both of you really as women breaking through, women of color breaking through a lot of ceilings and bringing your truth forth in a really powerful way and making a road for others like me and others who maybe are even younger, still just learning to write, learning their words right now. And what is the legacy that you're hoping to leave for future generations of women, writers, people of color?
I would like to see a national literature that includes everybody. Mm. That's what I would like to see, not a people of color literature and a white canon, but a national literature that says this is who we are. We are this many people in this many colors and combinations of colors and combination of genders and different kinds of genders. And it's just, I know it's an enormous fantasy because we have such a hard time thinking outside of check boxes.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But why not try for it? Why not try to recreate history in that way and be honest about who this country is? That's the way we have to be.
Mm-hmm. And Faith?
Yeah, I would say, you know, adding to that, just the full complexity of the experience. I mean, even now, when we talk about, you know, multiculturalism, it's like there's room for one story. You know, mm-hmm. there's a black story and it's often, you know, an urban story. And then we might have like one Arab and we might have one this or that. But people aren't ready to hear. I mean, when you talk to publishers, they're always like, well, you know, we don't need that. But of course, they're perfectly willing to have like countless, you know, white male coming of age stories. And so I would like any coming of age story to be valid and to look at the complexity within these groups, too, to say that, you know, someone is Latino or black or Arab is not just one experience, that there's a lot of permutations within that. And so really look at the complexity and diversity within our diversity.
Mm-hmm. The many intersections of people, humans, oppressions, and voices coming and breaking through. And let's give out the details to our listeners. Both of you will be reading this Thursday night, Berkeley City College.
7 o'clock. And get there early. Books will be for sale. We'll be signing it. So
I can get my autographed copy.
You can get your autographed
yes,
copy.
Yes, you can. Free, yeah. Open to the public. Yes.
Face might let you touch your hair.
Oh, I want to touch yours, Almaz. I want to touch yours.
I'm so not letting anyone touch my hair.
There is a famous moment where Toni Morris is on stage and the white woman who introduces her, like one of these social junior league types, says, "Can I touch your hair?" Right there on stage in front of everybody. And Toni whipped her a look like she almost melted her. I swear the woman almost melted into a puddle of water. And she said, "No, you can't." And just like that, and the woman like skulked off and never having this guest back. No.
Hands off the hair.
Hands off the hair.
All right. And a website, phone number. It's on the
voices@vona.org. And the number's on the website because I don't know it.
All right.
I never call us. And people should also look out if they're interested in being part of it. Applications go up in January and you can apply. And it's open to people no matter what their writing experience is. They must be a person of color and they must have a passion for writing. And that's the only requirement.
Right. Yeah. And it's all genres. So it's a wonderful opportunity.
Absolutely. And thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having us. It's been a pleasure.
You.
Absolutely. You're tuned in to KPFA. This is The Woman Magazine. I'm Tara Darabji. Stay tuned.